Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to episode 243 of What Most People Think. And I am, well, can you hear the background here? Now, I'm recording in a hotel, but I'm hoping, can you hear it sounds a bit classier than the usual Travelodge? Well, I'll tell you, that's because I am in a Radisson in Glasgow. I'm in a Radisson in Glasgow because I have just recorded. This is partly why the podcast is going up a little bit late. Obviously, still early for Patreons. But I just recorded an episode of The Weakest Link, the comedian special, which will be out in the autumn. Obviously, I can't tell you how I did, but man, that music, dun, 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 it puts the shitters right up you. But yeah, that was quite a thing to get back into after an Easter weekend where I went to Butlins. First up, I hope you had a fantastic Easter. Did you have a quiet one? So many people think it's worthy of, we just had a bit of a quiet one. Well, I had the opposite of a quiet one. We went to Butlins again. Some regular listeners will go, wait, didn't you just go to Butlins in the autumn? Yeah, I did. And I went again. What of it, man? As I always say, look, Centre Parks for show, Butlins for the pro. Well, look, I'll say this, man. We had a great time there. And at some point, I think if I am representing these great British brands like Travelodge and Butlins, at some point, I'm not even asking to be the face of their advertising campaigns. I'm aware that as a kind of straight white middle-aged man in his late 40s, we're not the guys that sell stuff at the moment. You know, we had a good run at it. Right now, we're not really the face of stuff. But I would just say this. Send me a fucking voucher. Do you know what I mean? I'm out there Instagramming your, you know, like a top level celebrity like Jeff Norcott. He's at Butlins. I mean, immediately, as I said it out loud, I've sort of realised why I'm not the face of Butlins. They go, yeah, that's the opposite of what the message that we want to send out, Jeff. We don't want to have a guy that looks like the kind of guy that is in the documentary about England fans storming Wembley Stadium. But we had a good time. And, well, I nearly got in fights with two dads, but there were a couple of situations on the on the go-karts and the laser tag, where it got a bit competitive and a bit stressy. So if you are a patron in the patron-only section, I will elaborate on that, as well as talking about maybe a bit of men's mental health as to why blokes get so competitive and why, you know, our anger sometimes comes out in what seems to be fairly irrational ways. In terms of the politics this week, obviously it was the bank holiday weekend, so there wasn't a huge amount going on, but we did have this situation over Easter where, well, Hamza, good old Hamza, he brought in the, well, fine. I mean, this legislation's been in the offing since 2021, but the Scotland hate crime bill came in on April the 1st. It's just genius. Did no one look at that and go, maybe just make it April 2nd? Do you know what I mean? Maybe 3rd or March 1st? No, April the 1st, April Fool's Day. We're going to bring in a foolish policy. So there's been some kickback to that. There's been a lot of kickback to that. J.K. Rowling has tested the law within, well, minutes of it becoming live. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're also going to talk about whether Whether or not like the backlash against the Tories is getting a bit out of hand, I mean, obviously there's loads of reasons to be angry, but I saw a poll recently that said that they thought Labour would be better on defence than the Tories. And I thought, hang on, all these things that are saying Labour would be better on immigration, the economy, NHS, is it just that, I mean, could you just say, do you think Labour would be better? Is that the question that you should really ask? And then just presume that that then applies to pretty much everything else. So we'll be talking about that. Just to mention, I was on the Now show last week, and I know some of you go, oh, Jeff, I don't listen to BBC topical comedy, but I was on the Now show and I did a piece about Nike and their tinkering with the St. George's flag design. And of course, lo and behold, we come out of Easter and Team GB with the Olympics have also done a really, I would say, overly funky iteration of the Union Jack flag. So I basically did a routine on the Now show, which is about all that kind of stuff with, I don't know, companies, corporations, sports designers, basically just always trying to, hey, we tweaked the formula. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's not one of those fucking chefs that just says, oh, we've done a shepherd's pie, but we've got chocolate in it. You go, oh, you know what? The shepherd's pie's been pretty fucking solid for years. So maybe you don't dick around with it. But anyway, if you like all that kind of thing, check out the Now show on BBC Sounds. New Patreons, just remember that whenever the podcast does go up, it goes up early, ad-free, and with bonus content for Patreons. We got a few new Patreons, actually. We just got Wayne, who I think is a returning patron. So remember, we've had the first of the month. So if you want to keep receiving the benefits of the Patreon, do just check to make sure that your account is still live. We have Wayne. We've got Kevin Larner. I suppose Larne is a place in Northern Ireland, isn't it? Kevin Larner from Larne. Kevin Larner had some Larne on his lurp back legs. Sounds like a tongue twister. Claire Hamilton. Claire Hamilton sounds like the kind of woman that runs like a PR firm. Claire Hamilton PR Solutions. One of those companies. Claire Hamilton PR Solutions. How can I help you? Yeah, I'll just see if Claire's in. And then put her on hold. Claire's like, I'm not fucking in. She's like the woman from Devil Wears Prada. She's like a home counties version of that woman. Tell her to fuck off until I've had my gin. So we got Claire Hamilton. I don't know. Are you an alcoholic, Claire? Do you love gin? And then we've got somebody who's named their account Leeds back in the Premier League. I don't know. Is that accurate? Leeds going to be back in the Premier League? I guess there's some teams that I just presume will just go up and down on any given season. It's like Leeds, fucking Bournemouth or Fulham. I could never tell you whether they're in the Championship or the Premiership, because, you know, you're interchangeable to me. God, I actually sell tickets all right in Leeds. Don't do it. People from Yorkshire are very proud people. Yeah, they get very proud in York. Don't be saying that shit about Leeds, Jeff. Don't be saying it. You're letting yourself down, lad. I think I might have mentioned it before, but people from Yorkshire, they're the only people in Britain that are particularly proud of the county that they're from. Yorkshire. I mean, you know, there are reasons for it. They got good tea. They won the Olympics in their minds. They won the Olympics. But you just don't get somebody from, like, I'm just trying to think of a nothing county. What'd be a nothing county? Wiltshire. Now all the Wiltshire people going, it's got a proud history. We've got some fucking amazing roundabouts just outside Swindon. But yes, thank you to any new patrons. And obviously, if you do join, I will insult your name. David Domain, our super patron, who listens to last week's show and picks up and fact checks and adds information about things. He said a few odds and sods. I was saying to somebody the other day, is sod on the bad word list? Is it now? The Ofcom one? The bad word list? Weirdly, people aren't as stressed about swear words anymore. People don't care about Fs, probably even Cs, but sods, you go, well, that comes from sodomite. It's homophobic. Is it? Can you say, oh, you cheeky sod? Can I get you in trouble? He says that Checkatrade, we were talking about the value of trades, and it says Checkatrade states that a newly qualified stonemason salary is around £32,000 a year, or approximately £145 a day. So that, whoa. Newly qualified? Jesus Christ, that's way more than a teacher. Probably more, is that about the same as a junior doctor? I mean, God, are we experiencing a rebalancing in the value of professions here? You know, you've had those families for years that gone, oh, my son's a doctor. Yeah, well, my son can build fucking drywall. David Domain mentioned Simon Evans has been having fun on Twitter. Yeah, Simon Evans has made the point that some of the more ornate Wetherspoons really are quite beautiful. And so do check out Simon Evans' account. But they do preserve, as David mentions, a lot of historic buildings that would otherwise be pulled down. I mean, in my town, the old post office is the Wetherspoons, but it's called... well, look, this isn't exactly where I live anymore, but it might give you a clue. It's called the Weeping Ash. And you can guess. All right, email in what most people think, uk@gmail.com, if you think you know near where I live, and if you think you can tell what very, very clever nickname, whatever, what rude nickname that people would give the Weeping Ash.
What most people think.
Thank you and a fuck you. So the thank you is, so... The comedy night, Standing Up for Blokes and Boys, is happening on April the 22nd, I think. Look, it's sold out. Anyway, it's sold out. But a lot of people were saying that you still wanted to donate. How can you donate? Well, we didn't want to ask for something for nothing. Unfortunately, we couldn't stream the event. So what we've got instead is we've got somebody to kindly, a cameraman, to, and it is a man, guys, chill out, to donate their time, and an editor to donate their time. We're going to make a film of the evening. So we're going to video some bits on stage. We're going to film interviews. We've got, obviously, the likes of, at the moment, Catherine Ryan, Romesh booked. So you're going to get loads of exclusive content. And donations start from a fiver. If you want to get your name in the credits at the end of the film, if you want to see your name there, £25. If you're really flush, £100, and we will actually say your name on stage. We'll say your name on stage, and it'll be recorded and in the final edit. So do go to, so check my socials. It's quite hard to search on Just Giving, but if you look at my Twitter, if you look at my Facebook, if you look at my Threads, I mean, fucking who's doing that? Threads is so weird. Threads is just like, you know, like the most hysterical left-wing woke version of Twitter. I think that is, Threads is like Twitter class of 2015. And so do check out all my socials, and please donate if you can, because obviously a lot of people are saying, this is a great cause, Jeff, we want to give money. There's some good money in the kitty now, but I want to, at least from this night, with ticket sales and other revenue, get more than 10 grand, and then we can disseminate that at grassroots level for people that are supporting men's mental health. Basically, in a nutshell, men to be in better health, and, you know, let's start working on this horrible figure of suicide being the biggest killer of men under the age of 50. All right, sorry for that bleak one there, but I do feel entitled to ask you for your dough. Let's do a slightly more frivolous fuck you. Well, not frivolous. Emma Hayes, right. So this might be one of not many times that I talk about the Women's Premier League on this show, but Emma Hayes is the manager of Chelsea. Now, she's a larger-than-life figure. She's got a lot of personality, do you know what I mean? She's quite, can be quite tetchy in interviews. You know, she's got quite a character. You know, she really stands out. And Chelsea were playing Arsenal in a women's FA Cup game, and there was like it was getting a bit sort of tense. There was a last minute winner or something. There was a touchline altercation between one of the Chelsea players and the Arsenal manager. But anyway, long story short, after the game, the manager goes to shake Emma Hayes' hand and she pushes him, right? Now, I would say that that is not the first time I've ever seen that on the touchline. We don't need to make a special mention of it because she's a woman. She's just doing what managers do. Managers are dickheads. A lot of top-level managers are dickheads. And in a way, the greatest act of equality that Emma Hayes has committed is just being as much of a dickhead as the male managers, right? So that wasn't a problem. I don't mind that. But then afterwards, when confronted and asked whether or not she should issue an apology, she immediately turned the spotlight on the Arsenal manager and said, "I won't have that male toxicity and that male aggression on the touchline." I thought, you just, that is such an easy out, isn't it? To just say toxic, male, masculine, and I won't be held accountable for my shit. If you look at the video, what she's saying is that the Arsenal manager, so there's some weird technical thing that Chelsea before the game said that they only wanted one match ball, i.e. you can't get the ball boys to fucking get involved. And you know, when a ball boy will quickly throw in a replacement ball. Anyway, some old bollocks, right? And then Chelsea kind of, in the search for an equaliser, picked up one of the other balls. The manager remonstrated. Then it looked actually like the Chelsea player, she came over to the manager and fronted up to him a little bit. But anyway, Emma Hayes, in the post-match interview, sort of did the victim thing a little bit. And I just thought, fucking, yeah, probably grow a pair is not the most helpful phrase to use in this situation. But I thought, on the one hand, fine, I don't give a shit that you've push somebody. I've seen Jose Mourinho act like a fucking petulant child enough times that, and we've seen, like, with female footballers, the one for the US, Rapinoe, whatever her name is, that there are a lot of egos now in women's football. All that is fine, but God, if you're going to act like a dick, at least take some fucking responsibility. All right, let's talk about the latest J.K. Rowling. Do you see what... Raul, let's just get on with it. So in 2021, there was a Scottish hate crime bill passed. And I remember some hoo-ha about it at the time. I remember, I think Leo Kirst, friend of the podcast, he was actually trying to draw attention to it. Hamza Youssef was the minister in charge at the time. And, you know, the Scottish Conservatives pushed back on it. I think Scottish Labour eventually voted it through. I'm going to presume the Scottish Greens voted it through. But within that legislation, it was controversial already because there were certain protected characteristics in it that didn't include women. But the SNP are saying that there's a separate bill for that on its way. So people were nervous about this legislation because it sort of allowed for, you know, arrest basically for insulting speech. But a reasonable person. How the fuck do the police decide on that? How long do you have to spend with somebody before you can judge whether or not they're reasonable? I mean, Jesus Christ, we've all got family. Do you know what I mean? That you know, 47 years, you're still not sure. A reasonable person. Insulting. I mean, immediately, I'm two words into this legislation. And I think I can see what the problems might be. Insulting speech. I mean, like, insulting could be like, you ask a woman her age. Some women find that insulting. So I might find it insulting if people say to me that 6 foot is the average height for a UK male. It's clearly not. Insulting speech that a reasonable person thinks might be likely to stir up hate. Well, so, all right, so straight away, I could tell you that this legislation's fucked. Now, there's been a particular problem for the gender criticals, because I think within the legislation, some of the characteristics that are covered are trans people, and it alludes to ideas of sexual identity. I mean, the way that they record non-crime hate incidents as well, that in itself warrants attention. Because the reason that they do it, right, is they say obviously it's quite hard to get convictions on things. So they're just monitoring community tensions. Yeah? All right, fair enough. How would you feel if your name was down somewhere as the perpetrator of a non-crime hate incident? You go, no, it's fine. It's just, I mean, Jesus Christ, I get upset if I get a fucking bad credit score and I don't know when, do you know what I mean? Like, when did that happen? When did I get that county court judgment? I mean, that's actually truer than I wish it would be. But, you know, and also you've got anonymous reporting. If anybody has worked in a modern workplace, one of the biggest problems you face is these little fucking keyboard warriors that just sit there. They haven't got the balls to actually talk to anyone about anything. They just sit there and go, oh, I'll just log another microaggression here. I'll just escalate that. Do you work in a workplace like that? Email me, whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. Do you work in a workplace where those people just escalate? There was a comment made about tea in the tea room while I was at the kettle. One of the men said, oh, make me one while you're there. I took that to be a misogynistic comment. You go, or you were standing next to the fucking kettle. You know, some people, and I've noticed some people on the sort of trans activist side of this have made a point, and I'll be honest, I made this point once upon a time, is that it is interesting that when Nadia won Big Brother, it was Big Brother in 2009 or something, that the fact that Nadia was a trans woman didn't really register. People didn't care too much. I mean, I made that point, but I think on reflection, there are some caveats there. First up, Nadia was like a great character in Big Brother. People bought into Nadia, the character. But also, that was like at a very different time. I think that people spoke about Nadia as a trans woman. I think that the real change in this debate came when, seemingly, sort of without much discussion with wider society, the argument went from people that had, you know, reconstructive genital surgery and being called trans women to people that hadn't had any of that surgery being called women. I mean, it was suddenly you had like the Harry Potter mob. They were very big on the trans thing, weren't they? Trans women are women. They just kept saying it. Trans women are women. Trans women are women. Trans men are men. And they just thought if we say it enough as an incantation, then people would get on side. But I remember also at the time there was a lot of people that said, well, you know, people will look back at this time in the same way that we're ashamed of homophobia. I just don't think that they're the same argument. The argument that trans women are women, it was a debate that we needed to have for a longer period with more voices than we did. It sort of felt to a lot of people that debate was had in kind of government quangos and online social media, and then it was sort of presented to the wider population as a bit of a fait accompli.
What most people think.
So JK Rowling has come hearing out of the blocks, and she tested the legislation, and she's come out and said that, well, she sort of named a bunch of mainly sex offenders, but not exclusively. And the fact it wasn't exclusively then might be where the controversy is. But she's mentioned people like Isla Bryson, the male who sexually assaulted a woman with his penis. And I think, you know, that kind of example kind of alludes to the fact that there's not many. I mean, this podcast is what called What Most People Think. I think you'd be hard pushed to find many people that would be able to use the words woman about somebody who, a biological male who'd sexually attacked a woman, you know. And she gave other examples of perverts, people that had conveniently transitioned their gender when awaiting sentencing, and so on. And so J.K. Rowling has called them all out as males, and she's done this while she's away, and she said, well, when I get back, arrest me if you will. I mean, in a weird way, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like a form of privilege, but potentially a good form of privilege, because she's sort of gone, all right, the ball's in your court. I mean, how much? Poor old Humza Yousaf, eh? Humza, him and Rishi must do secret midnight phone calls of going, for fuck's sake. For fuck, can I not get a break? For fuck's sake. Yeah, two leaders of two parties that have been in power 14 years, and just whatever can go wrong does. I mean, politically, to navigate one of the most famous women in Britain, a wealthy woman, a self-made woman, she takes your legislation and she goes, have some of that. And Scottish Police, as far as I know at the time of recording, have said they're not going to class that as a hate crime. Now, the SNP, I'm trying to be balanced here because it would be very easy to go all in on one side. The SNP have said that they do actually allow for gender critical views within the legislation. But this is kind of the point, isn't it? The point is that in Scotland, like in England, like in Wales, there are loads of problems, right? And the political message that this legislation sends out, and I know that it was passed in 2021, but the message that it sends out is a kind of fiddling while Rome burns kind of thing, isn't it? It's like, well, we got problems with our health services, we got problems with drugs, got alcohol, education, catch up after COVID. And what, you and your little fucking mates are sitting there dreaming up subjective views of reasonable people and stir up hatred and online harms. It's like, it's not, no one's saying that in the online age these things don't warrant some attention. But by God, I'd struggle to put it on the top 20 things that a government should be concerning themselves. And then, of course, you know, the SNP also, you know, Nicola Sturgeon fell foul of the self-ID law. So the SNP have had these very high-profile policies, and the message of all of them seems to be, we're kind of following the stuff that we give a shit about, whether or not it has sort of wider consent within the electorate. Now, some of that stuff people might say, well, it's in their manifesto, but I wonder, again, what most people think. If you ask people, where would you put an online hate bill or a hate crime bill on the list of priorities that a Scottish government should be tackling right now? And I think it'll be pretty fucking low. So the ongoing Tory implosion, right? They're losing votes to Lib Dems, now Reform. They're probably even losing votes to somebody on The Masked Singer. That's how badly it's going. And I saw an interview with Rishi Sunak, and he was with William Hague, and the fucking body language on it, honestly. It was like Rishi had been summoned to see his head of house. William Hague was just sitting there. Now, Rishi, I hear you've been slipping off in physics. And that was the worst William Hague. I apologise for that. Everyone thinks they can do a William Hague. Everyone thinks, the Labour Party. And he actually referred to the circumstances in which he got the job, and he said it was a bit of a hospital pass. And everyone was kind of like, oh God, yeah, poor him, poor billionaire. And I just thought, but it was. You know, I try to view things objectively, but it was a hospital pass. I mean, it's kind of weird, isn't it? He's not allowed to allude to the circumstance of when he got the job, which was that Liz Truss had been PM for 50 days, the pound had tanked, there was a run on pension funds. Now, you can argue about why that happened, whether or not there was some global banking reason and some collective action, but that was what happened, and that was the circumstances he got the job. And in fairness, you know, if you look at all parties that were in power during the cost of living crisis, not just COVID, but particularly the cost of living crisis, they're all struggling. Biden, you know, Biden, some of his stuff has worked. You know, the American economy is doing okay, but people feel poorer. Macron has got worse approval ratings than Rishi, if that's possible. Justin Trudeau, hey, we say people kind. Trudeau, he's got low ratings. I think he should just have low ratings based on that fucking smug look on his face. But I'm sure it's because people feel poorer. And so when people start to feel poorer and tired and working harder, they just start to blame the party in power for everything, right? interest rates. Now, it's definitely fair to say that the Liz Truss era accelerated interest rates quicker than would have otherwise been the case. But if you look at the degree that they rose in, it's pretty much in lockstep with the Eurozone and the US. But that's not the narrative, is it? That's not the narrative. And they are starting to get blamed for everything. Just anything. We're fat as a country. Tories, we're fat. Because the Tories making people eat shit food. We're depressed. Everyone's on antidepressants. Tories. We're lazy. Tories. I mean, like, some of that stuff, you could make an argument. You could say people are fat because people got less money. They can't afford, you know, they can't afford nice food. I don't know if that argument fully stands up. They're depressed because people got less money. They're depressed. They're working hard. Lazy. We're old. We're older as a country. Now, you definitely can't blame the Tories for that. The fact that after the Second World War, Granny and Granddad were shagging. They were shagging. And has anybody ever anybody ever stopped and thought about a baby boomer thing and thought, God, war made those guys horny? But there is this sense that Britain is in decline, right? You know, economy, it did grow last year. A lot of economies didn't. It did grow, but at an anemic rate. We are currently in recession. People expect to get out of it. But, I mean, there is a sense of, well, how does it change? The Labour Party that are not going to borrow more, not going to raise taxes and not going to do austerity. You know, it's hard to see. I mean, they better have some fucking genius ideas. And you know, there is that sense that, you know, if the party's coming in, who's going to be honest about immigration? Now, one thing is we've had anemic growth with quite high immigration. So you take that out of it, it would have been lower. Now, some people say, well, I'd rather have lower economic growth and lower immigration. But someone's got to have that conversation, right? Because currently, no one seems to be wanting to be honest on the political landscape, right? Imagine if there was a politician that just went, look, none of yous like having kids, yeah? None of yous like kids. You want growth? Have kids, all right? Do what your gran and granddad do. Have a war, get horny, right? We need to import. You know why? Because yous lot all want cheap shit from abroad. But you also want well-paid jobs at home. And you want fucking mangoes in January. I mean, not the mangoes grow in Britain at any time. So I don't know. I don't know. Like, I mean, there must be a reason political parties don't do this. They don't level and just say, look, the rest of the world got richer. We didn't come up with any big new ideas. The last big idea we had was the dot-com bubble. Do you remember that? When companies like put E in front of something, you know, e-commerce, just E in front of anything. And it was valued at £1 billion. Do you remember that? The dot-com bubble. Do you remember that? Do you have any? I think I mentioned this in my book, the first book, but people just buying up like URLs, website names. My mate bought a website name, iwantabeard.com, and he was like, at some point, somebody's going to pay thousands for that. I was like, who? He's like, well, you know, Foster's, Heineken. I was going, or they just call it Foster's.com. I think it was one of those get rich quick schemes. Did I ever tell you about, by the way, about a story about my mate who bought a timeshare in an ice cream van? And it was 6 months on, 6 months off. Right, a share of 6 months each. So we were like, oh, right, so you go 1 month on, 1 month off. He was like, nah, I've got October to the end of March. We were like, all right, that feels like the shit end of the deal, Steve. He's like, do you know how many hot dogs people buy in the autumn? So maybe that's what we need. Maybe that's what, a bit of belief, right? We need Keir Starmer coming with this old equivalent of, like, look, Britain, do you know how many hot dogs we sell in Britain? Because I tell you what, even if Keir Starmer was to say that his economic plan was based around selling hot dogs in the autumn, it would still be so a bit more meat on the bones compared to what we have now. And look, I have got no great compulsion to vote Tory at the moment, but I do think we're now drifting to this area of it's just things are shitter and we're blaming everything on the Tory party. But you know what? Same thing probably happened at the end of the Gordon Brown administration. So what goes around comes around. Okay, just a quick hype here. It is the last month of the National Basic Bloke Tour. I've been out on the road with this. How long? How long have I been fucking flogging dates to you guys? But we are now steering it in. I've got dates coming up this week in Crawley on Friday, in Reading on Saturday. Then I've got Dublin. I'm doing a gig in Sale, Redditch, Southend. That's nearly sold out. Ilkley, Southport. Have I mentioned Southport? I'm doing fucking Southport at the Atkinson Theatre. I've got loads of dates coming up. So do, look, this will be it unless you're going to the Edinburgh Fringe. But I would love to see you out on the road doing the show. I was about to do it again, didn't it? The Oscar acceptance speech. That nobody has given you an award, Jeff. Doing the show has been one of the greatest honours of my life. I've met so many people after the show, and some of you have touched me in ways that just weren't appropriate. All right, here's a little treat for you. Oh, I mean, you'll be the judge of that, let's be honest. Let's be honest. But look, Audible are doing a deal at the moment whereby, look, if you're an Audible member, I think you can get my book, the audio book of my book. This is great sales pitch, Jeff. Going really fucking well. Keep going, son. You can get it using one of your monthly credits, but also you can buy it at, I think, $2.99 until the 7th of April. This is a brilliant pitch. But look, as a little try before you buy, I've included a free audio chapter for your perusal. And this is about basically the fact that the word dad is always used as a negative. Enjoy. Dad equals bad. Now I'm going to take a bit of time to stick up for the word dad, which is increasingly being used as a negative adjective. I accept that blokedom doesn't necessitate the having of children, but the vast majority of us do, eventually. Furthermore, as the average age at which men first become fathers has drifted to 33, so the perception of the dad brand has faltered in line with men more generally. We now have a string of phrases, dad bod, dad joke, where the mere association with dad suggests, just as it does with blokes, that you should lower your expectations. As is increasingly the case, women, or mums to be more precise, escape any direct equivalent. Everybody loves mums. If you use the phrase mum bod with the attendant implications about body shape, you might find yourself getting cancelled. It's hard to be the family punchline, but that's what dads have somehow become. The light relief. In adverts, in most sitcoms, dads are the go-to safe person to take the mickey out of. For once, I'd love to see a modern advert where the hapless woman's been an idiot and needs to be rescued by a canny husband. It'd be a bold move for the next John Lewis campaign. When I was growing up, dad jokes were already a thing. The implication being that men becoming fathers led to an automatic deterioration of your comedy radar. If you search for dad jokes online, you'll find a lot of things which are, in reality, just very bad jokes. I'd argue that the dad joke is more than just a poor attempt at humour. It's a specific, almost self-aware kind of groaner. The easiest way to describe it is that it's not funny, but it isn't funny. Here's an example of the genre. I was addicted to the hokey cokey, but I turned myself around. Admit it, you smiled a bit. The point of a dad joke is to be so stupid that you, as a father, are indicating a willingness to look crap on the off chance that your self-sacrifice might make your children smile. You know it's not a great joke, so you fall on the comedy grenade, knowing that when you take the force of the blow, that in itself might raise a chuckle. Here's a recent dad gag of mine which I was particularly happy with. I took the family out for Sunday lunch and a helpful young waitress, clocking my 6-year-old son, said to me, "Would you like some crayons?" I replied as straight-faced as I could, "Yes, and could you also get some for my son?" "I don't care what you say, that's decent." My son gave me his trademark withering stare and said, "That's not funny." The problem is he was smiling as he said it. Admittedly, it wasn't technically a good joke, but the satisfaction of dadly stereotypes was the true objective. By doing a dad joke, I was reminding him that I'm his father and that all in the world was proceeding according to general expectations. It's also part of my dadly duty to get contemporary music references wrong. As a teenager, I was heavily into U2, and my dad would often call Bono, Bonio. I think he knew the correct pronunciation, but was amused by my huffing and groaning. My son, like most boys his age, is into YouTube gamers. I take it as my responsibility to call his favourite guy Preston anything from Prenton to Primpton or even Pritstick. I'm not doing it to be a dick. Well, not entirely. I'm granting him a moment of cultural superiority, reassuring him he's demonstrably more with it than me, which is as it should be. In a similar vein, my publisher calls Papa John's Papa John's, which makes his daughter facepalm, but also gives her the feeling she's way more experienced in the pizza game than he is. Dad rock is a more complicated phenomenon because the cultural frame of reference on which it draws changes over time. I was aware of this unofficial genre when I was young and considered songs within it to be stuff my dad liked, the Beatles, the Stones and the Small Faces. It never occurred to me that dad rock is a fluid and subjective genre which would eventually encompass the stuff I like. I was doing a tour date in Swindon a couple of years back and had, yet again, forgotten to bring my pre-show playlist to the venue. The young sound tech seemed musically savvy, so I said to him, "Just play some U2, man, Killers, Blur, Oasis, that sort of thing." He nodded sagely and said to himself, yeah, Dad Rock. I wanted to challenge him and point out that unlike the tired, stodgy shit my old man used to listen to, this was quality stuff. You two are cool, man. The Killers have only been around since the early 2000s, which is 20 years ago. Fuck! But I knew deep down that he was right and there'd been a changing of the Dad Rock guard and that this was a brutal way to find out I'd become significantly less groovy. A bloke recognises when this happens to him and has to just shrug it off and move on. So in the moment, I decided to keep my counsel, but asked him to add in something by Sam Fender, just to show him I wasn't a complete loser. I was chastened by the experience, but also knew that what goes around comes around. No matter how cool this man-bun lad in his long johns and ubiquitous fisherman's beard may have thought he was, there will come a time in his life when the music of his youth becomes naff. It's hard to conceive of, but one day, to the young people of the time, Doja Cat might sound like Cat Stevens. The dad bod has a more complicated meaning than dad gags or dad rock. As men get older, our bodies find it harder to metabolise things and we tend to store more weight, especially around the waist. But where's the campaign telling us we are curvy and gorgeous, that a natural shaped body is something to be proud of? All that happens is that we get told off for drinking too much and find leaflets for couch to 5K mysteriously lying around the kitchen. Any bloke would be deeply upset if his kids were to make a comment about his wife's weight, but apparently it's fine if they ask to bounce up and down on daddy's tummy, like it's their favourite fairground ride. It used to have a less trendy sounding label, the middle-aged spread, but dad bods aren't without their fans. I've seen celebrity magazines use the phrase rocking a dad bod. I'm not sure how you rock a dad bod, as it's not something that seems rockable. At best, it looks wobbleable. But that kind of phraseology is a symptom of an age where everyone has to be rocking something. I've lived long enough to see even nerds become cool, so why not that bit of a middle-aged man's stomach which hangs over his belt like a pout? I can credit that some women would find dad bods attractive. For one, they indicate an ease with yourself and your time in life which could be sexy. It could also imply laziness and that you've generally given up, but let's try to focus on the positives. However, I think most women only find it attractive ironically. Those of us with dad bods are the ripped jeans of body shapes, worn but redeemed somewhat by being vintage. Dad dancing is a less nuanced facet of the dad franchise. It frequently tops the list of most embarrassing things parents do in front of their children. A survey presumably excluding those who have ever blundered into their parents' room without knocking. I understand why. All the dad dancing stock moves are cringe-inducing. From having to constantly adjust your belt because it's not used to the sudden demands of your paunch swinging from side to side, to, for some reason, pointing at imaginary things in the distance. Then there are the comedy moves that dads attempt, which are usually about as current as someone wearing a mankini on a stag do. They've realised they're not going to be able to dry hump in midair like Channing Tatum, so take refuge in irony. But it would be better to genuinely dance badly than do a bad David Brent. For a child, seeing your dad get flamboyant to the village people isn't liberating. It's deeply disturbing. This father creature, who you've barely seen emote throughout your whole life, is, through the playing of a single song, throwing all caution to the wind and mincing around the dance floor like Mika. The men of my dad's generation all seemed to think they had a good Mick Jagger in them, so, after a whiskey chaser, they'd suddenly career from one side of the dance floor to the other, one hand on hip and the other wagging the imaginary finger of rebuke, while their equally drunk wives hooted their approval. But on occasions, the true bloke knows it's his duty to embarrass himself for the sake of joining in. His kids need to learn that a cousin's wedding day is not about them. Show willing, even if you do need a lie down or defibrillator afterwards. You don't want to be too good at it. Don't upstage the happy couple by executing a perfect breakdance routine, then backflipping over a cake. No one really wants to see their own dad do that unless he's in diversity. So do the honourable thing, give it a go and be shit. That way, you demonstrate your love for your extended family and cheer everyone up by giving them the chance to take the piss. Giving it a go is one of the traits I admire most in the British bloke. A geezer wouldn't consider humiliating himself by dancing in public, but the bloke will normally make a brief mental calculation, think, fuck it, what's the worst that could happen, and get stuck in. He may ultimately overreach with an ambitious attempt to do the splits, but as he sits on the floor, embarrassed and knowing this will hurt in the morning, the standard reaction is a thumbs up and a sheepish grin. Therein lies the power of the bloke. And bloke dads are the glue that hold a family together. Not with loyalty or wise words, but simply by being the one that can unite everyone for the purpose of Mickey taking. We're essentially the Liz Truss of family life. All I'm asking is that the word dad sometimes gets used as a prefix for something good. So let's go with three, where I think the average British bloke truly does have natural advantages which can help them excel as fathers. Dad reading. Mums do a great job with bedtime stories, but let's face it, blokes are better with silly voices and sound effects. Women have made great strides in many areas of equality, but sadly, machine gun noises are not among those achievements. I never knew that my uncanny ability to do impressions of both Donkey and Shrek would have genuine value until I had a child. Dad days. Given the greater care burden on women, dads are at liberty to bend the rules a little when they take the wheel. This film is rated 15? Well, you're 5. It still has a 5 in it. It's probably fine. Personally, I'm a great stickler for preaching about our son's nutrition, right up until I have him for a full day, and I make him order corn on the cob purely for cosmetic reasons, as we're having yet another KFC. Dad wrestling. What dad hasn't at some point been pinned to the floor by a marauding mob of small children and then, to their hilarity, risen up like a giant sea beast with them all still attached? It's also incumbent upon fathers to accept that for some reason their sons will seek to smash them in the bollocks from time to time. Maybe it's an Oedipal thing, or perhaps the boy is just trying to ground zero the means of production to ensure he doesn't have further siblings. As a bloke, as with many things in life, you have to accept it and understand that your status drop will have high comic value to the people you love. Okay, that is the end of this week's podcast. Hope you enjoyed it, and hope you enjoyed the chapter from the audiobook there. If you want to buy the book, it's available on Amazon. If you want to get special deals, join Audible. I think if you're on Spotify, you can get the audiobook there. I know you can get it on iTunes. How do you know that, Jeff? I don't know. Maybe I bought it myself and listened to it when I was bored. It's a good listen. Okay, we're going to do a few reviews here. Remember, if you leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, I will read out the 5-star ones. Bit selective, but there you go. So what have we got here? Okay, we do have some... Oh my God, I was pathetically pleased with that, wasn't I? Okay, we do have some... Oh, love me. We've got some reviews here. This is from Nelly. Is this from Nelly? That one, I'm going down, down, but the R&B guy? The What Most People Think podcast is always an interesting and thought-provoking listen. Jeff has a great variety of guests on this week. Dominic Frisby was excellent. I even enjoy the occasional episode where Jeff flies solo and just chats to himself for 45 minutes. Yeah, I mean, that is kind of what's happening, really, just chatting to myself. This is a great listen. This is from Swiney. One of my top pods for the week. Interesting and politically balanced, without all the usual bias and name-calling, etc. So good, I bought his book. Where did I go right? Audiobook. Yeah, I don't push that, but I mean, I still, that's, you know, I mean, look, obviously times have changed politically, but I think it's a good time capsule of how, if you, particularly if you're of my generation, how you'd end up voting Tory in the first place. I might have to do another book. How did the Tories fuck it all up so quickly? Maybe there's another book there. This is a weekly laugh. This is from Tui Scott. Tui Scott, mostly funny and engaging, sometimes annoying, but almost... Hey, I see what you did there. You knew I'd read the 5-star. But look, we're family. People listen to this podcast, of course I'm going to annoy you. That's what happens with family, right? We spend time together. It's like probably like your family at Easter. At some point, you just went and walked the dogs, even when they didn't need it. You know, you do that when you're with family. You're just dragging some poor fucking animal around a rugby pitch because you need some air. This is non-charitable 5-stars. All right, here we go. There's some criticism here, I think. So we've got one that says, oh, we've got another bad review that says I'm too Russophobic. This is, right, let's deal with the negative. So one person quite smartly has done a 5-star, but I have to read it out, but there's a criticism in it. It used to be an okay show. Oh, it used to be an okay show, but it's riddled with left-leaning guests. Well, I mean, so, okay, let's have a look at the last few guests. Let's see if that stacks up. Riddled with left-leaning. Dom Frisby? Okay, no, not really. Mark Nelson? Sort of. I mean, he's voted SNP in the past. I don't know where he's at now. Jacob Hawley? I mean, I'm trying to train that lad up to be right-wing. Andrew Doyle? I mean, really? Well, it's Dominic Frisby again. We've had a double dose of Dom. I should get a guy called Dickle. Andy Zaltzman. Yeah, all right, fair. I guess he would lean left. Simon Evans, Felicity Ward. I mean, it kind of goes one way then the other. But that's the whole point is when I got into comedy, a lot of it was an echo chamber of people just speaking to people that agreed with them. So hence, I'm not going to do the same thing the other way. And I hope that for the vast majority of you, that makes sense. If I have a guest that's too left-wing, I'll probably go the other way. Equally, if someone's right wing, I might think, well, maybe we're talking shit as well. This is from Rory. In a decade that I described the politics of the great ignored, Jeff brings that unheard voice with this podcast. When the din of the noise created by those minority groups on both, I don't know where this accent's going, stop demanding. I mean, that fell apart completely, didn't it, into coughs and stuff. But anyway, Rory, I've read the whole of your review. It's quite a long review, but I appreciate what you're saying, and thanks for leaving the review. And like I say, yeah, there's this guy that says that it's too Russophobic. I can't remember us being Russophobic, but yeah, obviously not a great fan of Putin at the moment, but I wouldn't extend that to the Russian people. Yeah, I think a few weeks ago I said I'd love it if they voted him out. I'm sorry, that's Russophobic. 5 stars. This podcast is brilliant and funny. Have been to see Jeff on tour and read his book. Takes on serious subjects with lots of humour thrown in. Keep up the good work. TV documentary was great too. That sounds so like I just threw that in at last minute, doesn't it? Oh, Jeff, did you wanna just throw in your documentary right at the end? Have you not plugged like the Just Giving for the Standing Up for Men and Blokes? Have you not plugged your date? Have you not plugged your audiobook? You had to mention the documentary at the end. Well, the documentary that was Critics' Choice or Pick of the Week in The Guardian, Telegraph, Daily Mail, Times, and I don't know, probably Pink News.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.